The Malbim. Ki chamas levanon yichasecha. This is the punishment. The punishment to Nebuchadnezzar or to Belshazzar. I mean, basically to Nebuchadnezzar, to Belshazzar, to Edom, three mahalchim. Let's see what he says. The Malbim. Ki chamas shasisa el halavanon shu habeis hamigdash. The chamas, violence, the act of violence that you have committed against the Levonon, which is the Beis HaMikdash. That was the Machlokes in Rashi. Is Levonon a word that refers to the entire Eretz Yisrael? Or does Levonon refer specifically to the Beis HaMikdash? It will cover you. Ma shechilalta klei HaMikdash. This, that now we have to remember what we learned yesterday, that according to the Malbim, the subject and the topic of discussion is Belshazzar. Three mahalchim in these psukim. Are we discussing the Nebuchadnezzar or are we discussing Belshazzar? Number three, Edom. And if in Edom you can break it down into two parts, it can be discussing Edom who destroyed the Bayis Sheni, or it can be Edom of Yemois HaMashiach, referring to the days of Mashiach, now, Achshav. So really, it's four mahalchim in the pasuk. The Malbim Lishitasai understands that the pasuk is referring to Belshazzar, 70 years later from the beginning of Bavel, when the night of the writing of the wall, when there was the handwriting on the wall, and Daniel interpreted the words to indicate that the end of the Malchus of Bavel is imminent. And Paras Umadai would replace Bavel as the world power. And this took place when Belshazzar had the Azus Panim, the audacity to take out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash and drink and offer his friends, colleagues, a toast in using these Kalim and defile the sanctity of these Kalim. And here he writes over here in punishment, Mashichalalta Kli HaMikdash, this that you have defiled the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, hechamos hazeh yichascha bekoloni, will cover you with shame. You will now be punished, and the punishment will be that you will die. V'shoid behemois yechisan, shi'ur hakosuf. The meaning of the pasuk, this is the term that he uses often, the shi'ur hakosuf, the measurement of the pasuk, which is an expression, which means the way we have to understand the pasuk, V'shoyd behemos yichisan, kiryo v'chol yoshrei bo, midmei odom v'chamas eretz, yan kara es beis hamikdash b'shem levanoin, being that we call the beis hamikdash the levanoin, Lebanon, tziroi b'mlitzasai kiyar halevanon, we have to be consistent and use its vocabulary. It's as if the Levanon sent forth its animals. It's the forest has animals, and the forest had gave out a call that all of the creatures that live within shall gather. And the violence of the animals of the Levanon will cut down the city and all those who live within. Shehem tarfu kiryas bavel v'yoshvecha. So you see, he says here just the opposite of almost everyone else on this page, all of the other commentators. All of the commentators, they basically learn that kirya v'chol yoshreva v'chama is referring to the victims, that Eretz Yisrael was a victim to the violence of Nebuchadnezzar or Edom. And when we use the word kirya, it referred to the victims living in the city with the hey hayidia. What city are we referring to? Yerushalayim HaKodesh, Kol Yosheva. But the Malbim says no. The kirya v'chol Yosheva is not the victim. This is the aggressor. This is the enemy that in punishment for what he has done, the Levanon will give out a call to all of its partners, its creatures, and they will come forward and they will destroy Nebuchadnezzar, or in this case, the Malchus of Bavel, the city of Bavel. Okay, the Malchus, the Kirya, the city. What city? Where was the capital of Bavel? Not so simple. Where was the capital of Bavel? There's a nation called Babel. We once learned this. There's the empire. The nation is called Babel, but it seems that there was also a city called Babel. That was the capital of the empire, and it will be destroyed. So,
well, you have Babylon and Babylonia.
Babylonia. So which one is the city? Which Babylon is the nation? Babylonia is the city, or the other way around?
Babylon is the city.
Is the city?
Babylonia
is the nation. So exactly. So that's what it seems over here to say is that Babylonia.
In that book, on Hebrew language, there's a very interesting map, and there is a city Babylon marked on that map.
Okay, so that's exactly what it's saying over here. According to the Malbim, the Levanoin will give a call. A rally call, rally the troops, attack, and the Levanon is the Beis HaMikdash, will give out a call to rally the troops. In this case, the troops will be Paras Umodai. Paras Umodai will bring retribution upon the enemy Nebuchadnezzar and his Malchus, Evel Roidach, and Belshazzar. They will come forth and destroy them. And here he refers specifically not just to the land, but also to the city, referring to the city of Babel. Shehem Tarfu Kiryas Babel, they will rip apart the city of Babel, V'yoshvecha, not just the nation of Babel. V'chen Yirya Yitzir Ma'peles Babel B'signo in Zen, the same expression. Hine ke'arye yale migo'oin hayardein el nevei eson. The Arya, the lion, will rise up from the pride of the Yarden. I guess that's the Levanon, that's the forest. The forest is in the vicinity of the Yarden, El Neve Esan, and it will go towards the abode of the mighty. Who is the mighty? Nebuchadnezzar, Babel. Babel is the Neve, the abode of the mighty, and it will be destroyed. Shadimo chel poras umadai ka'aroyois, like lions. Shabohu me Eretz Yisrael, who come from the land of Eretz Yisrael, Ugoin Hayarden, and from the pride of the Yarden. That's a region, it appears that's a forest that is adjacent to the Yarden. They will come forward, even though we know that in Paras Umodai they did not live in Eretz Yisrael. What it means over here is that Paras Umodai means they will be the Shluchim, they will be the agents of Eretz Yisrael to come forth, Linkoim Nikmas Eretz Yisrael, to take revenge. For the exact vengeance for the crimes that were done in Eretz Yisrael, the Es Bavel Himshil Litzayin Imloy Yischavum Tziire Hatzayin. Will it not be so that they will be dragged? Yischavum literally means to be dragged down. The Tziire Hatzayin, the young sheep. And the young sheep here refers to Babel. This will be in retribution for the blood of men that has been spilled. And the violence that has come upon the land that they have destroyed. Referring to, again, the vocabulary of the Levanon, the animals that are found in the Levanon, Shehem HaKorbanos. Oh, so now he's saying something a little bit different over here. The Behemoth refers to the Korbanos. Okay, this is very beautiful. Shehem HaKorbanos Shekrivush Shama, Vinosnu Damam Bakelim, and their blood was put in the Kelim, Asher Chilel Ata, which has now been defiled. Okay, this is truly, truly remarkable. Let me explain. I always wondered about this exact point. And here he explains this in very great, he answers the question. I always wondered, always, about when it says that Belshazzar and Achashverosh, he took out the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and he proposed a toast. Which Kelim exactly did he take out and drink wine from? Did he take out the Mizrakois, the Kalim that were used for blood? The vast majority of the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash appears, I don't know for sure, but appears to be used to collect the blood of the Korbanos. There are four parts to every karban. Shechita, Kabbalah, Hailacha, Zrika. Three of the four parts of every karban involve a mizrak, involve using a utensil. The utensil collects the blood. You hold it under the neck of the animal at the time of shechita. You use this utensil to collect the dam hanefesh. You then take hold of it and you convey it. You walk with it to the mizbeach. And then you sprinkle, you put your hand into this container or you throw it. You actually throw it. It depends on the different types of korbanos, where, when, how, on the mizbeach. Now these kelim, if you would ask me, are disgusting. Who would want to take a utensil that was used to collect blood and propose a toast and drink champagne out of this utensil? It's dirty. So you'll tell me, well, we clean it. We wash it in the sink. We sanitize it. We do hagolah. Okay, I understand. I get it. You take it and you sanitize it. But still, these utensils were used thousands of times for blood. It's just not the type of utensil you would expect a person, even a person who was mocking the Ribbono Shel Olam, to use to propose a toast. So what would be the solution? What would be the alternative understanding of these psukim? The nesachim. I always thought that was the obvious answer. The nesachim. Every karbon was accompanied by a meal offering and a libation. Yayin. V'niskehem k'mishpatam. There's a Reviyas ahin la par, ushlishis ahin la ayil, reviyas ahin la keves. Each karbon was accompanied by a wine libation. You fill up a cup with wine and you ascend to the top of the mizbeach, and there's a special designated spout on the top of the mizbeach, and the wine is poured down this spout. So these are cups that are used specifically for Yayin. It was never meant that a human being should drink from this cup, but it was meant for Yayin. So when it says that Baal Shetzar, he took out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and he filled them up with wine and he drank and he gave to his colleagues to drink, I assumed he took out the kelim that were used for the Nesachim, which were used for wine, and instead of pouring the wine on the mizbeach, which was destroyed, and here he is in here, he's living over here, not in Eretz Yisrael, he's somewhere in Bavel, wherever he is drinking from those cups. So guess what? The Malbim says that's not the pshat. The Malbim says here beferish, and he learns that's pshat in the pasuk. That Baal Shetzar, he took the kelim that were used to be mekabel the dam, the blood. It was not disgusting in his eyes or his intense desire to mock the Ribbono Shel Olam. It crossed all rules and regulations. He was in violation of the basic rules of hygiene. If he did this, you can certainly bet that he violated social distancing. He violated all the rules and regulations of the CDC and the experts in public health. He took a utensil that was used for blood and he used it to drink yayin because of his intense hatred for Klal Yisrael. And now it is awesome, off the charts, how we learned pshat here in the pasuk. These kelim have also personality. They also are a life form. And when the kelim that we use to accept blood of behemoth, parim, elim, kivosim, the three types, basically the three different types of korbanos, when these kelim witnessed that a rasha, Baal Shetzar, is abusing the utensil, the animal element, meaning the blood of the animals that were always received in these utensils, stood up before Hashem and demanded a response to the insult. Let me read the words. Let's look at the words again inside over here, because this is very, very special what it says. He really explains, he opens up a very great understanding, fascinating understanding in the Pshat and the Pasek. We go back to the words over here of Yomar. It's 1, 2, 3 lines from the bottom, from the end of before Yudches, towards the end of the line, Vigam, I have another interpretation, Tofas Shein Behemos. The reason why we're focusing here on the Shoid Behemos, the violent act of desanctifying these utensils, it was a violent act, it was an insult against all of the korbanos, the blood of the korbanos, of the behemos, which is another word for a korban, that was accepted in this very cup. V'gam tofas shein behemos, lirmos, to hint, el habehemos, shahoyu gam balavonon. Now that we said one line above that the levonon in the understanding of the Malbim refers to the Beis Hamikdash, not just to Eretz Yisrael. Gam habehemos shahoyu gam balavonon hamelitzi, which is the metaphor that we're using here to refer to the Beis Hamikdash, Lebanon, shu Beis Hamikdash, shehem hakorbonos. Shekrivu Shama, that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash, Vinosnu Damam, their blood was put, Bakelim, in these very utensils, Asher Chilil Ata, which Belshazzar has insulted, has defiled, desecrated, and Uchi'ilu His Oiruru Behemo Yisraele. These korbanos, whose blood was received, was insulted. The korbanos live on. Ve'heviu shoyt v'chamas, and it is they who went to Shemayim, went to Hashem and said, Hashem, you know, this is not fair. They're insulting us. Shoyt v'chamas al kiryas bavel, and they demanded bavel be destroyed. Awesome pshat here in this pasuk. You know, also it answers for me another question. The way the Malam learns on the pasuk, he's saying something very, very interesting. He's saying that the animals live on. I don't know how literal he means to take this. Is he just giving over here a mashal, a melitza? But it's almost as if he's saying that the korbanos live on. We have an animal, and you slaughter the animal, so we think the animal is dead. Dead as can be, gone. We have the blood, and the blood goes on the mizbeach. The Malbim is saying something very bizarre. We have no idea how this works. No one ever explained this to us. Is that the animal's not dead? The animals, ki adam hu hanefesh, the neshama of the animal is alive in its blood, and when the blood goes on the mizbeach, it is a living creature that is sanctifying Hashem's name, and that living creature lives on. It lives on for generations, and it has memories. It has memories that once upon a time it was received in a holy vessel. And now it gets a sense, a transmission, that holy vessel, which was, it served as a receptacle to give honor to Hashem by using it to do the Kabbalah, the Halacha, and the Zrika, is being insulted. And then this neshama of the animal, it comes before Hashem to demand a response to the insult. Really? It lives on? There's such a thing? I got no idea, but one thing it does trigger in my mind, the last Tosfos, in Mesechta Menachos, this Tosfos always bothers me. It bothers me very much, Tosfos. It says there, we say in davening every single day, V'yashev es ha'avoyde l'dvir be'secha, V'ishei Yisrael usefilo sam ba'ahava sekabel beratzayim. What does that word mean? V'ishei Yisrael. So Tosfos there has a discussion what it means. We're not going to spend time on it now, but one of his perushim, one of the perushim of V'ishei Yisrael is, it refers to the neshamos of the dead. And there's in Shemayim, there is a Mizbeach. And there is a Kohen Gadol. I think it's Michael. Now I'm saying it's Michael. And Michael every day selects the neshamos of tzaddikim who are in Shemayim, who have passed away from this world. He takes these neshamos and he offers them on the Mizbeach, on the fire of the Mizbeach in heaven. So when it says in Ritzei, we say this every single day, Shemona Esrei, three times a day, V'ishei Yisrael. What it means is, V'ishei Yisrael usefilo sam, and their prayers, Sikabel beratzayin. What is the, we know what usefilo sam means, but what does it mean, V'ishei Yisrael? The neshamos of the tzaddikim who are no longer in this world, but who are present in the Olam HaEmes, which are being offered on the Mizbeach in Shemayim as a fire offering by the Malach Michael, may you find these offerings acceptable. Now, this is beyond Kabbalah. This is way, way over any of our heads, what this means. But what bothered me about this in my little mind was, in this world, when you offer a sacrifice and you slaughter the animal is dead. Goodbye, no more animal. All you got left is a cup of blood. Okay, you pour the blood on the Mizbeach. And then what do you do with the animal? You burn it. You burn on the Mizbeach. Gone. It bothered me very much. If the Malach is taking a neshama of a tzaddik and is offering it on the Mizbeach in Shemayim as a fire offering, what does that mean for the neshama? Does that mean that the neshama is gone? The neshama is toast? The neshama lived in this world. It went to the next world. And then whatever happened there happened. And at some point in time, that neshama was offered as a sacrifice. And gone. Neshama did its tafkid. It got its reward. Whatever all of this means. And it's the end. I mean, it's very bizarre, this Tosfos, the Masechta Menachos. And it's the Pasha Pshat in the davening. Well, guess what? This Malbim is teaching us, you got it all wrong. Not only does the neshama of a tzaddik live on after it's offered on the fire of the Mizbeach in Shemayim by the Malach Michael, guess what? Even the animal on this world, you have a behema on this world, you have a keves, a little sheep, and you slaughter it, and you mekabel its blood, and you pour the blood on the Mizbeach, and you burn the sheep, guess what? The keves didn't die. The keves lives on. What do you mean it lives on? What does that mean? I don't know what it means. But the Malam over here says something really, really off the charts. Because it's so much alive that even 500 years later, if Balshetzar will come along and take that receptacle in which that keves' blood was received and will be mevazeh, will defile it by using that cup for wine and taking a drink, the keves will say to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, this is not fair. He's insulting my existence. I gave up my life for you, Hashem. And I gave up my life, my blood was received in this receptacle, this holy receptacle. And now look what the Rosh is doing. This cannot be. I demand a response to the insult. Okay, the keves lives on even in this world. Allah has kam v'kama, the neshamas of the Ishei Yisrael, they live on in the next world. Okay, so this really, really says quite a mouthful, this chiddush here in the Malbim. Now let's see the Mamori Chazal. Okay, let's.
Yes. Can I just make another point? Going back to the animals, Ophel on the rise and the Nebuchadnezzar are referred to as a lion frequently. Allah Arye Misibcho. Right?
The lion has risen from the thicket, yes.
Yeah, that's a often quoted pasuk with respect to Babel and Nebuchadnezzar. But now, according to the Malbim, the lion is now Paras and Madai, and the former lion have turned to sheep.
That's right. Very good. Einachinami. Ayin Panim B'Torah. Ayin Panim B'Torah. It all depends on the context. It all depends on the Mefarash. The context of the Mefarash are variables which have many dimensions. And it changes everything. You're right. It's musical chairs. Who's who? Who is the lion? Who is the sheep? Sometimes we're the sheep and Nebuchadnezzar is the lion. Here we say the Nebuchadnezzar is the sheep. And the lion is Paras and Madai. Absolutely. Everything will depend on the Mefarash and the context of where it's said. Okay, now let's take a look over here at the Mamori Chazal. Going back to Pasuk Tesvav. Let me put it up on the screen. Okay. Pasuk Tesvav in the Mamori Chazal. Hoy Mashke Re'eu Misapeach Hamoscha V'af Shaker. Woe to this evil man who is giving his friends to drink, and the man who collects his anger. This man who collects his anger and becomes intoxicated and causes others to be intoxicated. It says in the pasuk in the Shiras Hayam, Uveroiv Geoincha Tarois Kamecha. In the abundance of your Goin, referring to Hashem, Hashem is called Goin, Tarois Kamecha, you will demolish those people who rise up against you. So again, the subject is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem is called Ga'on. He's called the one that has pride, a healthy pride. In the abundance of your pride, you will demolish your enemies who rise up against you. Here, Beisol Hiska'ois Negin Misha Kam Negdecha. The Ribbono Shel Olam increases his pride opposite those who rise up against you. Umi Heim Shekamu Negdecha. Heim Shekamu Neged Bonecha. This is a very beautiful idea, which is repeated very often, is that when you start up with Klal Yisrael, you are starting up with Hashem. And where do we see this? We see this by Belshazzar. Belshazzar, Malka, Avad Lecham Rav. He made a party to celebrate the end of the Jewish people. Belshazzar, Omar B'Teim Chamra. Belshazzar, he said when he was tasting wine, Lehai soya lemonade, to bring. The word lehai soya means to assess, to bring forth. Lemonade, the half of a kasba, the utensils of gold and silver. Ishtiv chamra, he drank wine. Ba shata, at that very moment, nifaka etzbaon di yad enosh. There appeared on the wall the finger of a human being. When he did this, when he gave the command to bring forth the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash to drink wine, it appeared a finger of a human hand, and it began to write on the wall, Edayin Malka Ziyohi Shinoihi. At that time, the king got afraid. Ziyohi Shinoihi, he became terrified. Okay, I don't know what the word Shinoihi means. Ziyoi means he was afraid. And he called for Daniel to explain to him what these words mean. And Daniel said that your time is up. When the music stops, drop. Time is up. The Olav Hoimer, and concerning this it says, Hoi Mashke Re'eu, woe to this evil man Balshetzar gives to drink his friends. Misapeach Chamoscha, you have collected your anger. The Af Shaker, you have become intoxicated. The Oimer, Savata Kolei Mikavod, you have chosen shame more so than honor. The Oimer, Bei Belelia, that moment, Kitil Balshetzar. So really what it's saying over here is, this is Mechilta, Mesechta, the Shira. This is a Mechilta. And basically what the Malbim said is rooted in the exact words of the Mechilta. Rashi didn't select the Mechilta. Rashi chose to learn the Pesukim Lefi Pshuto, Nebuchadnezzar. The Radak chose to understand this in reference to Edom. But the Malbim, who came way long after Rashi and the Radak, he really did not say something original. He really, what he is saying is, comes straight out of a more ancient source, that being the Mechilta. This entire pasuk is a summary. Chavakuk had a vision of the story of Balshetzar. Chavakuk lived about 100 years before the Churban, the Churban was and 70 years out, approximately 52 years. So we're dealing over here with an event that took place at least 150 years later. That's pretty good. Pretty good to have such a tunnel vision to see what's going to happen 150 years from now. He was able to see the entire story, and he summarized the entire event with prophecy in the words here, Mashke Re'ehu, Balshetzar he gave to drink his friends, Misapech Chomoscha, and he collected his anger against the Jewish people, the Afshaker, he became intoxicated, L'man Abed Al-Me'orehem, all this was to view their shame, Savata Kolon Mikavod, Jusei Gamata Ve'hei Orel, V'chul V'chul, what we learned the last 2 days, it all came back upon him, all of the punishment came back upon him. All right, now we go to the next pasuk. The next pasuk is Tezayin in the Likutei Shas. Savata koloi mikavoid. You have chosen shame more so than honor. Shesei gam ato vehei orel. Omer Rabbi Yaakov. Berei debas Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov said, who is Rabbi Yaakov? He was the son of the daughter of Yaakov. Okay, that's a very interesting title when you want to refer to the yichus of the mother. You have that every so often. When we refer to Berei, the son of the daughter of Yaakov. Why do we do that? Because sometimes the father wasn't Jewish, or sometimes the father was problematic, and we don't want to give him any, we don't want to mention him. We don't want to mention him. Over here he says Berei Debas Yaakov, very interesting name of a person. And what is over here? Kol Shechaver Nenash Al Yodai Ein Machnisen Oisai B'mechitzas Eshel Kadosh Baruch Hu. Minala mehacha, savata kolo mikavod, shesei gam ata vehei orel. What's the proof? Savata kolo mikavod, zenevuchanetzar, shaya oines es hamalachim lemishkov zachor. He was sated with shame. This alludes to his act, his avera, his toeva, of intoxicating his colleagues and living with them, mishkov zachor, shegia toiroi, Shel Tzidkiyahu, Nimshecha Orlasai. Now, Toiroi Shel Tzidkiyahu. Now, look, now, then what had? This is a very fascinating medrash. Toiroi means the time. When it came time now for Nebuchadnezzar, he wanted to engage Tzidkiyahu in Mishkav Zohar. You ever hear such a shocking medrash? Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do a to'eva with Tzidkiyahu. Toiroi means his time. What happened? Nimshecha orlosoi shaloish me'ois ama v'hoisa loy likolain. Nebuchadnezzar's erva, it stretched, okay? It expanded 300 amas. Now, I don't know what that means. Okay, 300 amos is 600 feet. How big is a football field? Okay, anyone have any good numbers? How big is the football field? Chazonish Shir is 600 feet. Is this a hyperbole? A guzma? L'chayr it is. What it basically means is that Nebuchadnezzar was humiliated. Everyone in his presence saw his humiliation in the fact that his Amo, his Erva, was abnormal. There was something abnormal that was going on. And this was in punishment for his desire to do a to'eva with a tzaddik, a holy tzaddik, Tzidkiyahu. Shesei gamata vehei orel. Then when it says that you shall drink vehei orel, zed Tzidkiyah, shegam roi lo'oynish al shegoram es ho'oynish l'nebuchadnezzar. This is something that is totally, totally shocking. That you also, Tzidkiyahu, you also drink vehei orel, and you also should be exposed. Why? It's your fault. You are the cause of Nebuchadnezzar's shame. Now, what can that possibly mean? What could that mean? Doiche Hagamah, the Gemara says, how could you say that? Chada de kulo krab Nebuchadnezzar ksif. The Gemara doesn't like that. How can you say that? The Gemara in the Had, the Gemara in the Havamin wants to say that. Let's read all the words together, then we'll come back and we'll explain. The Gemara does not like that. The Gemara does not want to say that the second half of the pasuk refers to the Tzidkiyahu, that Tzidkiyahu will also be put to shame, because it takes two to tango. Tzidkiyahu was the cause of Nebuchadnezzar being humiliated, and any person that is the siva of another person's humiliation, no matter who that person is subject to punishment. The Gemara is not happy with this, because who says that Pshat in the Pasuk? The entire Pasuk is referring to one man, only to Nebuchadnezzar, period. And Tzidkiyahu does not enter into the arena here. That's number one. V'yoy Tzidkiyah tzadikah. Tzidkiyah is a tzadik. May havilele mevadle. What do you want from the poor guy? Why should Tzidkiyahu be guilty? What did he do? He was an innocent bystander. Just because Nebuchadnezzar looked at him and had kavana to do an avera, that makes Tzidkiyahu guilty? A woman who is a beautiful woman, she can't walk in the street? Is that really true? A beautiful woman, because if a beautiful woman walks in the street and men look at her, they're maharer bi'avera, and when they're maharer bi'avera, they will be punished. So because they're going to be punished, the beautiful woman who walks in the street, she's going to be punished. Is that really fair? It's not fair. It's one thing if a woman walks in the street in a provocative way, but if a woman walks in the street in a responsible way of tzinius, she's allowed to walk in the street. Same with Akasha. So just because Tzidkiyahu existed and he was there and he was present, and the Nebuchadnezzar, he wanted to do an avera that makes Tzidkiyahu responsible, my havile lemevale, the yom of Yehuda amarav, and his erva, his ama, was machzeres. It appeared in front of all of the assembled, in front of all of the people in the room, and it was a very great disgrace. Shenemar savata kolon mikovod shesegamata ve'orel begamatria sheloish meos hove. So the Gemara over here leaves it hanging. The Gemara over here does not really answer. The Gemara over here in the Hav Amina is suggesting that Tzidkiyahu is guilty. And then the Gemara says, no, it's not fair. He's not guilty. So man of Shach, is he guilty? Is he not guilty? What's going on here in the Gemara? It's a very bizarre Gemara. The Gemara starts off by taking the Pasuk, Tezayin, and breaks it into two parts. Part A is Savato Kolon Mikavod, period. Ze Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to be put to shame. Part two, Shesei Gamata Veheorel Tzidkiyahu. You're also guilty because you're the Siba, you're the cause. So you're both guilty. In fact, the Gemara, it's not fair. First of all, it's not the Pshat in the Pasuk. The Pshat in the Pasuk, the entire Pasuk from beginning 10, part A and part B, refers only to, refers only to Nebuchadnezzar, not to Tzidkiyahu. And part B is, what do you want from the poor guy? The curtain closes on the Gemara. So what's the maskana? Is he guilty or not guilty? So the answer is a little guilty. Not a lot guilty, but a little guilty. The fact that the Gemara presents this and rejects it, you know, there's a yesod in the Gemara. Every hava mina is also true. It may not be lehalacha in this particular instance, but elsewhere it's true. Probably the most classic example is in Purim. Do you fold tachnun on the 16th day and 17th day of Adar? Do we fold tachnun? Well, I do, and most of us do, but there is a minig by some people not to fold tachnun. No, you don't fold tachnun on Purim, it's day 14, and day 15 is Shushan Purim. What about day 16 and day 17? Purim is over. You know, Purim is only one day a year. Some people don't know that. Some people think that Purim is the whole year. But Purim is really only one day a year. So day 16 and day 17, it's business as usual. You go back to folding tachnun. But there is a minug. I don't know anyone who does this, but there is a minug. It is cited. Yeah, you don't fold tachnun because in the Gemara, when the Gemara has a whole discussion of when exactly are you allowed to lay in the Megillah, we know you Megillah Nikreis, but you're the first Mishnah. Everyone knows this. Who didn't learn the first Mishnah? The Megillah. Megillah Nikreis, but you're Aleph, but you're Beis, but you're Gimel, but you're Dalet and Tesvav. It used to be that you can lay in the Megillah early. If you can't be in the city on Purim itself, you can lay in the Megillah on day 11. If Monday, the last Monday, is day 11, you glean Tuesday, and then the Gemara has a whole long drasha. How do you know? Mehechatesa, you glean the Megillah Monday on 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And the Gemara goes through a whole drasha. And part of the drasha, the Gemara entertains the possibility to darshan the psukim that when we're going to be marbe more days to lay in the Megillah, maybe there is a hava amina, we can lay in the Megillah after Purim for the latecomers. On day 16 and day 17. And then the Gemara says, no, 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 no. Don't say that. It says in the Pasuk, V'lo Ya'avar. The cutoff date is day 15, finished. So now, when we have a drasha that allows us to lay in the Megillah early, it can only be 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. But because the Gemara entertained the Hava Amina, that it could be on day 16 and day 17, there's a little truth to every Hava Amina. And that truth is enough to celebrate day 16 and day 17 a little bit. How do you celebrate a little bit? You don't say Tachanun. Okay, a little bit. Now, I always say, for a Litvak, a Kaltel Litvak like me, and like many of you, I'm not trying to insult you, this doesn't hold water. The bottom line is, everyone here in this room says Tachnun on day 16, day 17. But I'm telling you, there are people out there somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere far, far away, maybe in a different galaxy, that do not say Tachnun on day 16 and 17 because of the Gemara's Hava Amina. A Hava Amina. There's a kernel of truth. The Gemara here is very clever. The Gemara here says, Tzidkiyahu, you're going to be punished because you are the reason why Nebuchadnezzar was humiliated by having this thing happen to him in front of all of these dignitaries, that he was humiliated. I'm not going to be graphic in describing in Nachamol the humiliation, but you're responsible. What do you mean you're responsible? You're allowed to walk down the street. And the Gemara, yeah, you're right, you're not responsible. The fact the Gemara said that you're responsible, it basically means sometimes you are responsible. It all depends. We have a woman who's exquisitely beautiful, and she's dressed tzniyistik, very, very tzniyistik, and there's a hangout on the corner of some lowlifes. You know, maybe it would be better she does not go down that street. because these guys are such, they're so low, they just see a woman, they go crazy. Go down the other street. Go down the, you're right, you're permitted, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's mutter. Just because it's mutter, it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Like the minyanim, like the porch minyanim, maybe it's mutter. Maybe you follow all the guidelines. Everything is right. The government says on the books, please come down. We're not going to put anyone in jail here. We're not going to go give you a ticket. I'll tell you 1 second. Everything is legal. Like, we can't do anything to you. It's legal on the books. Indoors, everyone is following what it says in public health rules. 6 feet bidiyuk. There's tape on the floor. But, you know, even though sometimes it's mutter, it's not. Because it sets a tone. It creates talk. And there's a tone, a message goes out that leads to no good. So just because you're right, you're wrong. And that's the big nisayon, and that's what the Gemara here is doing with Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar. He is the cause of Nebuchadnezzar's shame. But he's a tzaddik, he didn't do anything wrong. You're right, he didn't do anything wrong. But the fact that Gemara presents it is hinting, could he have done something more to prevent this? Maybe there's something that we don't know. He knew, we don't know. And the mashal for our life is, there are things in life that are mutter, 100%, but you have to still be careful. Yes, Rabbi Chol, you mamish, you're coming out of the screen. We now call to Hollywood Squares. On the top right corner of the screen, we call you down. Yes.
Okay. Wasn't it Tzidkiyahu who embarrassed Nebuchadnezzar by breaking his vow?
That was later. That was a later Maisa. That was much later. This was when they all got together at the G8. They all came together. This is much earlier. This is an earlier story. They came together.
I'm thinking that this happened when he was captured, not when they were on good terms.
All right, I don't know, maybe, so what difference does it make? Whatever it was.
Because the time frame is different, that's what.
Okay, so whatever the time frame was, whatever, I mean, this is a medrash. A medrash, Kedarkoi, is taking a pasuk out of context and is teaching us a lesson. This is pasha, this is a medrash. So whenever it happened, it happened. Did it happen in the good old days? Did it happen after he rebelled and he was taken down, he blinded him? He blinded him, and in front of it, whatever, the whole, he killed his 10 children, and he blinded him, and he put him away as a prisoner in a dungeon? Or did it happen in the good old days, when everyone, they had these meetings, these big summits, and that's when the Maisa happened, when Tzidkiyahu saw Nebuchadnezzar eat Avram and Achai, and he took a shavua, he won't tell anyone. Whatever it was, the Maisa Shehoya Kachoya. And the point, one thing is for sure, Orel, the Hey Orel is Orel the Gematria 300. In Orel, isn't that interesting? In Orel is 300. 300 is a very, we had a whole shiur on this. 300 is a very holy number. It's a very holy number. It's in fact the last letter of the Aleph Beis is really Shin. It's the end. Tov is more like a transition letter. It's a transition letter to get us back to the Aleph. The Chayze Chalila. On the Tefillin, you have the Shin. You don't have the Tav. Why don't you have the letter Tav on the Tefillin? Why the letter Shin? I know, Shakai. Forget about that. Why the letter Shin? Shin is the Shlemos. It's the Gemar. It's the end. It's the apex. 21. It's the very end. Tav is the packaging. It's the packaging. Acharon, I always tell you, Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. Twice. Acharon, Acharon, the second to last is Chaviv, not the last. The last is not Chaviv, the second to last. The Shin, 300. An Orel, there is nothing more despicable in this world than an Orel. An uncircumcised guy, a guy, that's the most derogatory term you can say about a non-Jew. He's an Orel. That's like, you know, all the nasty things that you're not allowed to say on Zoom is all nishrash in the word Orel, and yet Orel is bigamatria 300, a number of kedusha. Every time Chazal want to talk about dvarm sheb the kedusha, it's 300. When they want to talk about dvarm of gashmius, they use the number 400. All of the hyperboles in Chazal, it's either they say, oh, this guy 300, or this guy 400. It's always either 300 or 400. And there's a pattern that is definitely true. Whenever we're discussing the spitz of Ruchnius, we say 300. And whenever we discuss the spitz of Gashmius, we use the number 400. Esav came to Yaakov with Arba Meois Ish, because Esav was the spitz Bal Taiva. Okay, Avram took with him Eliezer, Begematria 318. So you have 300. Okay, that's an 18 is high. I mean, that's not a really good example, because that's not a really good example, but 318, but it's a combination of two different numbers. But I don't remember all the different examples. There are a lot of examples of the number 300. Maybe if you want, I'll go very quickly and I'll tell you. I wrote them down. I wrote them down in my notes, and I can bring
it up. But does the Gemara tell us that 300 numbers ascribed to a guzma?
Yes, a guzma of the spitz of Ruchnius. Of Ruchnius. I'll give you examples. Here we go. I have this in my notes. Here we go. 300. No, I only have two examples. Okay.
It's just hard to see how this one reflects Ruchnius.
Oh, that's that exactly. So that's that. It's a gematria versus a gematria. Don't ask cash on gematrias. Okay, I'm not a gematria man. Don't ask me right from God. Over here, it's a chazal. The only type of gematria that you're allowed to play with, only gematria, is a gematria that is given to us by chazal. This is a gemara. Gemara is kodesh kodashim, and the gemara says beferish. Orel b'gematria shloish meos havei. That's a Gemara. A Gemara you can't play around with. The Gemara is Orel b'gematria. So David is telling over here, the Gemara Lamaskana interprets this pasuk in reference to Nebuchadnezzar. He was humiliated in that his oma was nimshach 300 amos. What? What in the world is... Obviously, it's a guzma. It's a guzma. 300 amos. 600 feet. Okay, there's no way to understand this. You can tell me, I don't think we're obligated, are we, to believe in things that are not in the world of reality? Okay, it's there are nisim. In the Torah, we learn about nisim. We have an obligation to be maimin in the makos, kriyas yamsuf, in Matan Torah. There are definitely miracles that we have a duty. It's part of Aleph Beis Yadus to be maimin in Nisim, the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And I don't know the answer to this question. Are we obligated to be maimin in Nisim that we find in the Gemara like this? When it says that the Nebuchadnezzar's Oma was Nimshach 300 Amos, does Yadus, does Yiddishkeit demand from us to be maimon, literally that's what it means, or it's pasha that the Gemara is giving a guzma.
Speaking in symbolic language.
Exactly. I would assume no, that it's never ever meant to be interpreted literally, because that's not yadus. That's hocus pocus. That's not yadus. Yadus is to be rooted in the world of reality, and there's miracles. Don't make me into not be curious. There are miracles in the Torah that we believe in. We're maimed be'emuna shalema, yitzias mitzrayim, the makos, kriyas yamsuf, matan Torah, and kriyas hayardein, and the miracles of oig melech habashan, what we say in the holy Hashem gidev kilam chasto. Those we're maimed in. That's aleph beis. But things like this, I don't know. I don't know the answer. It's not so pashut. Someone told me Avigdor Miller that he was very strong. I may be making a mistake that it's posh that it's not to be taken literally. And he says something like, it's challenging enough the nisim that we have to believe in. There's no way Chazal would put upon us a duty to be maimin in more things that are lemala mederech hateva. It's not a responsible thing.
The morale's approach.
It's
in symbolic language, and you have to work to understand the symbolism.
Okay, we have a problem now in society today, is that not only are we miming in this literally, we're miming in other crazy things. Every day there are new things. Did you ever hear about fish? Remember that whole fiasco in the front page of the New York Times? A fish talks. Okay, a fish. Now there was a guy in a fish store, and the fish started talking to him. And there's Eidus Nemona that the fish was talking. All right, listen. You want to believe a fish talks? It's hard enough. Before you believe in fish, go through Shas and go through all of these mice and nisim, and from the Tanaim and Amorim. And when you believe in these, then we'll talk about fish in the 21st century, about fish talking and on the front page of the New York Times. In any event, so what is the meaning? I don't know. But basically, you have to then say, if it's the Gematria 300, is that an Orel. In an Orel, a person who is an Orel, there lies potential for Kedusha. Isn't that what Chazal say? Chazal said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, someone asked, I think, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, if Hashem wants a person to have a bris milah, why didn't He create human beings that are already formed with a bris milah? And Rabbeinu HaKadosh answered, the Ribbono Shel Olam, He's giving man an opportunity to be a partner with Him in the Bria. Sha'amar le'olamai dai. Hashem said to the Bria, enough. Let man have an opportunity to also have an impact upon this world. Let him be a partner with me in creation. An orel is a symbol representing the incompleteness of this world. It is the product of Hashem's shakai. Hashem said, Sha'amar le'olamai dai, vayomer lekim yihi or, vayihi or, the result is orel. The product of Hashem saying dai is orel. That's where the kedusha begins. That's where we enter and we perfect the world. It's just a mashal for everything in this world that we as Klal Yisrael have an opportunity to participate and perfect the world. That's where we start. That's where all of the Kedusha indeed lies. That's why it is indeed Bigamatria 300. It is the extreme level of Kedusha, because it's not an open Kedusha, it's a hidden Kedusha. It represents our opportunity on this world to partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, where are we holding over here? All right, so this concludes this Chazal. All right, let me just see what we have over here. On this page, we have here a Gro. We have another minute. Let us learn a little Gro, and then we'll stop. Just a little taste of the Gro. Okay, a little taste of the Gro Savata, because the Gro here is indeed very nice. This Gro over here actually says some very nice things. Tomorrow I want to go further. Let us learn from, let me put back on the screen. Let me put back on the screen the Gro.
I think it's funny that you mentioned the New York Times and carrying a story about a talking fish when the paper itself is not even worthy of wrapping fish in.
Ooh, what a line they have. Chol, you're sharp today. They tried to do tshuva. You know what they did? They said they had a report. Oh, it's sideways. Oh, good. Sideways this. They had a report that 50% of the plasma donors in the United States, 50% are Orthodox Jews. Okay? Even the New York Times had to acknowledge there's something very special about a Jew, an Orthodox Jew. They feel the achrayas to be mishtatev, to help. 50% of the plasma donors to cure, to use as specimens, to study, not to study, they actually use it. They actually put the plasma into, I read up, it's very fascinating how they do it. To actually put the plasma into sick people to attempt to heal them. All right, I'm not.
Sometimes it does help. It does help. It's been, I know somebody in my shul. He put it in.
Yeah. Do they know it's because of the plasma? A lot of people get better by themselves also. You have to know what's going on, you know, just because.
He had double pneumonia.
All right, we hope. Just because it worked, you know, yeah, they have to prove it scientifically. Like I told you, the seller who went and he did very nice, beautifully, bought letters in the Sefer Torah to support Hatzalah. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, they raised their fundraiser there. And he said, it's true. If you buy a letter in the Sefer Torah, you're going to be healed. Because he bought and he got better. Really, really. You know as a fact that because you bought a letter, you got better. So just because they put plasma from a person who has antibodies into your body doesn't necessarily mean it really works unless they can prove scientifically that it works. It's very experimental. All this stuff is all experimental. Let me read the Gro. I'm going to read you the Gro. You don't have it on your page. So you Gro a little bit. Savata chashav kan arba oynoshim shegilim v'chanetzar. The Gro is always into numbers. The Gro is obsessed with numbers. And he says here, let me just read this. There are four punishments here that are enumerated in this pasuk in punishment to Nebuchadnezzar for his crime. What are the four punishments? Sha'asa k'neged golus yoyakim nenash savata kol mikavet. Hainu shenasa chayil bolo mikavet. Let's read very quickly. I'll translate it. Bolo mikavet k'moshe nemar oid mimoske shegamata golus yichonya. Okay, Balshetzar was killed. Shesei Gamato is Shanasa Oid Oinesh. Nebuchadnezzar, he was dragged. And Tisoiv is Neged, the Beis HaMikdash, his Bavel. Okay, so let me explain to you. He's saying over here something that's really, really beautiful. We can't miss out on this. If you look at this Pasuk over here, Pasuk Tezayin, this is very important Yesite. If you count carefully, there are four punishments that are coming upon Nebuchadnezzar. Number one, Savata Kolon Mikavod. Number two, Shesei Gamata Veheorel. Number three, Tisoif Olecha Kois Yemin Hashem. And number four, Kois Hashem. And number four is
and
Kikoloin al Kivodecha. That's number four. So what are these four? What are these four punishments in the Pasuk? They correspond to four crimes. Crime number one was Golus Yehoyachin. 11 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, he exiled the Melech Yehoyachin with the Charash VeHamasker. Punishment number two was Kineged Golus. First one was Kineged Yehoyachin. I made a mistake. Take a step back. Yehoyachin. The first Golus was Yehoyachin. Yehoyakim is what he did 18 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, or really 17 years. 18 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Nebuchadnezzar was acknowledged as the world power. The next year, he exiled Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim, and he actually killed him. He took him down to Babel, he died on the road. He replaced Yehoyakim with Yehoyachin. He replaced him immediately. So the first crime was the Golos of Yehoyakim, which was 17 years before the Churban. The second crime was the Golos of Yehoyachin. The third crime of Nebuchadnezzar was the Sreifas Beis HaMikdash. And the fourth crime was the Golos of Tzidkiyahu. There are two elements in the Churban Beis HaMikdash. There is the Churban, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and he also exiled the survivors. Just because he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash does not mean he has to kill everyone and take their survivors to Bavel. Many kings didn't do that. When they conquered another nation, they conquered their temple, they destroyed their palace, and they set up a new law and order. You don't have to kill everyone. You don't have to exile. No, he wasn't satisfied. He exiled Tzidkiyahu and he killed everyone. So he committed four averos. Number one, Golus Yehoyakim. Number two, Golus Yehoyachin. Number three, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Number four, Golus Tzidkiyahu. Corresponding to these four sins, he suffered four punishments. Punishment number one was what it says over here, Svata Kolon Mikavod. And that refers to, according to the Gra, refers to he turned into an animal. Remember that discussion we had yesterday? He turned into an animal. Punishment number one was Shasei Gamata Vehei Orel was what happened to Balshetzar, the Enikol. The Enikol was destroyed. He was destroyed when the third punishment of the of the Shrevas Beis HaMikdash was his Bavel was destroyed. Now, how is that different? Shenishav Bavel. How is that different than Balshetzar? Nenash Shener Balshetzar b'mishte hayayin. He's saying the fact that Balshetzar was killed, that counts as a separate punishment. The Churban of the entire Malchus corresponds to the Shrevas Beis HaMikdash, and the Kikoloin al Kivoidecha refers to Vashti. Vashti was killed, corresponding to the Golus of Tzidkiyahu. This is an awesome thing. He's telling us over here the Gra. This is just very powerful. Vashti died in punishment for what Nebuchadnezzar did to Tzidkiyahu. Where do you hear a medrash like that, a chazal like that? To connect Tzidkiyahu to Vashti because of what Nebuchadnezzar did to Tzidkiyahu. He blinded him. He blinded his eyes. It makes a lot of sense. He blinded his eyes. Vashti was commanded to come naked so everyone can see her fully. Ze l'uma ze. It's an amazing insight from the Gra. Only the Gra can reveal something like this. It's mamash mida k'neged mida. Tzidkiyahu was blinded. He lost his ability to see. Mida k'neged mida, Nebuchadnezzar's great granddaughter, Vashti, the daughter of Balshetzar, she was told to come naked in front of Achashverosh, and when she so everyone can see her. And that was the sibah of her death. That was the mida k'neged mida. The churban of the nation of Bavel was mida k'neged mida, the destroying of the Beis HaMikdash. The golus of Yechonia was the cause of Balshetzar dying. Just because the malchus of Nebuchadnezzar came to an end doesn't mean that he has to have no descendant. The fact that he was killed, Balshetzar was killed, was mida k'neged mida in the understanding of the Gra k'neged the golus of Yehoyachin. And the golus of Yehoyakim corresponded to the fact that he turned into an animal. What would be the understanding? It's very simple. Because when Yehoyakim died, he took Yehoyakim down as a prisoner to Bavel. Something happened to Yehoyakim on the way down to Bavel. He died on the road. And you know what they did to his body? They took his body and they threw it into the street, into the side of the road, like a dead donkey. Mida k'neged mida. You treat the body of the Melech Yisrael as like an animal? You, Nebuchadnezzar, will turn into an animal. He turned into an animal. Poetic justice. Here we have over here four insight from the Gra. Very, very powerful. And Yirat Hashem, tomorrow we will continue with Pasuk Yud Ches. We'll take a short break. Talk today about Oinoas Devarim and the sugya of Kisikne B'chisimkor mimkor la'am yisecha. The halacha that a person has an obligation to buy merchandise and to use the services of a Jew over a non-Jew. When is that true? When is that not true? It's a very complicated sugya. When are you mechuyif to use the services of a fellow Jew and not use the services of a goy, especially when the services of a Jew are more expensive than that of a non-Jew? Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll continue afterwards.